Can I get a sound check from you?
Can you hear me? This is me talking. Talk, 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 talk.
Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly. My name... Nope.
The epicenter of murder, mystery, and mayhem.
My name is Junt.
All right. And I'm your other host, Brianna. Welcome back, guys. I feel like it's just been so long.
It has been long. Not for you guys, but for us.
For us.
It's been...
a whole year.
I think 2 weeks at least.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Uh-huh. Ooh. Uh-huh. Had a little bit of equipment troubles. Anyways.
Let's do this already.
Yeah, so...
I don't have a question.
Me neither. Question. Who'd you vote for?
Oh, no, that's a secret.
That's a secret? It was Trump.
No, fuck that yellow Cheeto.
Fuck that yellow Cheeto ass bitch.
I have a question for you.
Okay, what's your question for me?
How do you deal with anxiety?
Oh, it's funny you would ask. So, I know a lot of people with anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. I, however, do not have them. Have it. Mm. There are, like, a few things that will cause me to have, like, anxious feelings. As we discussed previously, procrastinating gives me anxiety because then it's like a control thing. I feel like I have no control over the situation. If I procrastinate, then I can see like the end closing in around me. So I just avoid procrastinating. However, when I was on medication for being crazy, which is fun little sexy fact about me. I was on this medication that one of the side effects is anxiety. So if you have anxiety already, it ramps it up. And if you don't, it just like makes you an anxious person. So I started having anxiety attacks sometimes. Anyways, so then this person told me that, he was like, hey, what are you doing? And I said, I think I'm having an anxiety attack. And then he was like, oh my God, are you okay? Anyways, but he told me to do, like, really deep breathing, right? Like, level deep breathing. And then he was like, and now just try to focus on one constant noise around you. Like, he was like, if your refrigerator is making a loud noise, or if your refrigerator, if you can hear your refrigerator running, just focus on that noise and just keep breathing and listening to, zeroing in on just that noise. And now I know how to not have an anxiety attack, because I do that when I have really bad anxiety. I'm not on any medication anymore. Mm-hmm. But I know how to deal with it now.
That's good.
And it works for me a lot. He had a lot of anxiety, so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's how I deal with it. How do you deal with it?
I have really bad anxiety about literally almost everything. Mm-hmm. And I like to watch Bob's Burgers. That's, like, my go-to to just chill the fuck out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main one. I'm really easy. I fall into pits where I just don't know how to get out of them. Mm-hmm. Or I'll be, like, I like to focus and distract myself on other things. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I'll just try not to think about it. Mm-hmm. I've tried the one where you do the, like, name two things you can see, one thing you can hear,
yeah,
three things you can touch, that kind of thing. I've tried that one a couple of times, but my anxiety is usually at night as I'm going to sleep, because you don't have very many distractions at that point. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually like, all right, I gotta read a book, I gotta do something, so...
Right.
That's when I have my big anxiety attacks. So to deal with it, I mostly just try to keep myself distracted.
That's fair. That's smart.
But Bob's Burgers has always been, like, my go-to. If I can watch that and chill out, there's not that many bad things in the world.
I just lost a lot of eyebrow hair while you told me that story.
Okay.
Sorry, I got distracted by it. And I have a bald spot.
You don't. You just keep touching your eyebrow. Then you will have a bald spot.
I want a bald spot. Well, on a related note, how do you deal with, like, I don't know if you're like me, where you have highs and lows. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with, like, your lows? Like, if you have depressive, not episodes, because that's a different thing. But when you feel very depressed, what do you do?
I like to read a lot. So reading is what helps me, like, again, I have to distract myself. Mm. Remember when I told you I run away from my problems?
This sounds like that, yeah.
Constant running away.
I was like, breathing exercises. And you're like, running. TV. TV yeah. until it stops happening.
Yeah.
And I turn the TV off and I face my demons with my eyes shut under a blanket.
Yes. Yeah, but, like, with my depression stuff, I'll call my mom, because my mom really can put things into perspective for me, mm-hmm. and she knows, like, almost everything. Like, you know, things you don't really like to tell people.
That sounds terrifying. Just gonna weigh in, don't want anyone to know me.
Yeah, but my mom's the only person that, like, she's very good at, like, knowing what's going on and being able to disconnect from being my mom and just being, like, a supporting friend. So she's really good at that kind of stuff, where she can split off and be a different person that I need. I don't need my mom to be like, give me a lesson about it. I just need my mom to be like, hey, no, think of it from this perspective. I always need, like, a different perspective to think about it.
Uh-huh. And you don't ever succumb to the fear of being known?
No.
Oh.
Because my mom already knows a lot.
I'm an enigma. I like for people to not know me.
I'm very open about a lot of my shit, though. Oh. That's the thing. It's hard for me to, like, keep it in instead of being... Like, there's a lot that people don't know, but, you know, everybody has their secrets. But, like, my mom knows nearly all of them. And it's easy, because she'll be like, well, this is you're feeling this way probably because of this. So think about it this way, which is very helpful. Mm-hmm. You always kind of need somebody to be like, you're doing it to yourself, which is my big thing a lot. I'll
do it to yourself.
I'll do it to myself all the time. I'm literally my worst enemy. I am so mean to myself. It's not even funny. So I need somebody to constantly be like, okay, relax. You're not that bad of a person. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
so
good.
Yeah. My mom's good at being like, Brianna, you're not that bad of a person, so relax. Oops, sorry. That's what she does constantly. Brianna, stop it.
You never want to take the Elsa route? Conceal, don't feel, don't let it show.
That's like the running thing, though.
But now they know. Because that is my move a lot of the time.
Uh-huh.
Because usually it'll go away. Because for me, it's highs and lows. Mm-hmm. So I just conceal, don't feel, and then it'll go away. Eventually. Sometimes. Or it'll get really bad. But the way that I deal with when I have a lot of the depression, in a way that is not a depressive episode, but is also not like a, I'm sad, mm-hmm. Is that I just cry really hard.
I lean into it.
I lean into the depression.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes it's really hard to see the way out, but I don't have a better way of dealing with it. So I lean into it, try to process it, and then try to move on. Today I started cleaning my toilet. And then I was very involved in cleaning my toilet. Then I went to get a different cleaner. And then all of a sudden I wasn't crying really hard anymore. And also, I put a shirt on.
That's good.
If you're ever really sad, try to put a shirt on. Maybe you aren't wearing a shirt right now.
I have like one good cry a month. Just one really, really big cry. Usually nobody's around. Thank God. One thing will trigger it, and then I'll just cry about everything I was mad about that month, and then I'm okay. And then I run away from everything for the month, and then I cry.
Okay, this doesn't sound like a good plan.
Look, man, I'm trying to get therapy, okay?
I used to...
Everybody out here sucks.
I used to cry really hard mm-hmm. every day. Every day.
I can't. I got stuff to do.
To the point where...
I have no time.
If I was in my... Well, I would...
No time. Nope.
I had a very functional depression. Because every time I was in my car, I was like, it's go time. Mm-hmm. And I would cry the whole way to work. The whole way from work. And if I was driving anywhere else, I was just like... like, heavy, heavy crying every single day. Uh-huh. And then I don't know the last time that I cried before this. That wasn't because of a very sad movie I was watching that made me feel things. That's
easy for me to cry on movies.
I've cried to every Jumanji so far, so I mean, gotta see the all next movies, level. I should watch Zathura and see if that makes me cry. Probably not. She tries to fuck her brother in that movie. I don't think that's gonna make me cry. Anyways, yeah, but, yeah, so today I just cried real hard. The thing is, I didn't,
I cried yesterday morning in my car.
I love that.
I was listening to Simple Plans, I'm Just a Kid.
Oh my god.
It's very specific triggers, I don't know why. Music, I will always cry to. If it's like a good song that hurts, I will cry. And it will not be cute.
I was listening to music before I started crying, and I was listening to Dermot Kennedy. So, just in case you're wondering, that's a good guy. He's a good musician. You will cry. You will cry. Just want you to know, you will cry, because he's so good. Anyways, let's just do this fucking podcast
now. Let's stop talking about how we cry so fucking much.
Yeah, we gotta cut some of that crying out, because we're hard.
That's my thing also. I will cry in front of very specific people. A lot of people don't know that I have all these fucking mental health issues. Nobody knows. Nobody knows my shit. But I don't talk about it that much. It's very select people.
I feel like when anybody sees the way you try to Ron Burgundy through things, they all know. Yeah, I feel like that's a big trigger. You're like, I don't have any feelings. And people are like, oh, girl.
That is the perfect description of my feelings. You should go
cry, because you are clearly upset.
Yeah. I cry. Yeah, I will Ron Burgundy. That's the perfect description. I've never heard it described so perfectly.
You're welcome. I just face all of my feelings.
Nope, can't do it.
Unless I refuse to admit that they're real. That's the fun part. If I don't want to face something, it gets locked away forever. I am my best friend because I will hide shit away within my psyche and it's fucking beautiful. Which one do I want to do first? Alright, I'll do this one because this one's short. Alright. So, we didn't play rock, paper, scissors.
Fuck.
I was just gonna start reading. I was so eager to pretend I don't cry. Okay, rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Paper.
Scissors. Rock, paper.
Oh my god.
Scissors, shoot.
What? You just yelled scissors.
Because I was doing a whole countdown and you wouldn't stop laughing.
Okay.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Paper.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot, scissors.
Oh, fuck you.
You won.
Rock. You won. You know what it is? I held up rock, but I thought paper. Since you were so eager.
Balled up paper.
Garbage. All my secrets on this piece of paper.
And I eat it. And no one will ever know.
Okay. You're very eager, so you can go.
I'll go. I have both my stories, each on a thigh. Mm-hmm. I said cross-legged, if you guys are wondering. Anyways, I feel like I should just double-team them. And I'll go line by line. And then it'll be like a fun mix and match. Where you guys try to transcribe it to figure out what story I was telling. Okay, so we are on or in February 1st, 1959, on the mountains of what would be Russia. An experienced mountain trekking group from the Ural Polytechnical Institute set up camp on the Kolat Siachal. Seacle. Fuck, this is the Russian story. Okay, 10 hikers named Igor Dyaltov, the leader, Yuri Doroshenko, Lyudmila Dubinina, Georgi, aka Yuri,
oh my god,
Kravonishenko, Alexander Kolevatov, Zenaida Kolmogorova, Rustam Slobodin, Nikolai Thibault Brignoles, Semyon, a.k.a. Alexander Zolotaryov, were all... How did this long sentence start? 10 hikers named. Okay. We're all in their early 20s. No, all in their early 20s were on a route to the northern regions of Sverdlovsk Oblast and the upper streams of the Lazva River. They set up camp and enjoyed dinner, following that with sleeping. This is the last day documented in their notebooks and on their cameras. On February 26th, searchers find the tent abandoned, which had been ripped open from the inside. They follow the footprints that they find left in the snow by the group, left in part by bare feet, socked feet, and some with only one shoe, which lead deep into the woods. Mm-hmm. There they find two bodies, shoeless and in their underwear. They appeared to have died of hypothermia. Hypothermia, that's an English word. It appears that in the middle of the night, they all got up and ran from camp without a known cause or the proper attire, ripping their tent from the inside out. Over the next few months, they find the seven other bodies. Six of them being ruled to have died of hypothermia, and three with physical trauma. So the first two bodies that they found were Kruvo and Doro. I was done with my story. Damn it. Okay, the first ones that they found were Krivonishenko and Doroshenko. Both of the Yuris. It did appear that the first two bodies that they found had climbed the tree. So they find them off of the camp, in the woods, up a tree. In their underwear, no shoes.
That's so, a lot to process.
Yes. So for the three that they find with physical trauma, there's Ludmila, who had died from internal bleeding from a severe chest trauma. Mm. Nikolai, who had a fatal skull injury, and Semyon Alexander, who had severe chest trauma. So, one body was missing both eyes, and one body was missing its tongue.
Jesus Christ.
They believe that a compelling natural force had caused the death. They also happened to find... God, do we have any idea what... I need to start writing the dates on these. What date that I wrote this story is the question. This led to a lot of speculation because they couldn't find what they had apparently been running from. It took them forever to find all of the bodies because they were scattered. And that was
10 bodies?
Yeah, and they couldn't rule anything out as far as what might have happened to cause this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so over the course of the investigation, they try to figure out what they could attribute this mass death to. Since they couldn't find anything that would line up for a specific thing. Mm-hmm. They believe that it could have been all of the following things. Animal attacks.
Okay.
Hypothermia. Mm-hmm. An avalanche. Mm-hmm. Katabatic winds, which are winds that are caused by wind coming down the slopes. Mm-hmm. Infrasound-induced panic, which comes from the wind blowing... And echoing off the noise of the wind blowing and echoing off of the mountains, and it causes this vacuum of sound, and it causes infrasound, which can then affect your mind in such a way that it'll induce a panic. It can drive people insane. It's the pressure and the noise collectively. They also found high levels of radiation on some of the clothing, which then led them to believe that there was KGB interference.
Okay.
They also had theorized that they had just all done drugs, but that didn't line up with anything.
Okay.
There was also, somebody thought that there were third-degree burns on one of the bodies. Somebody thought that this may have been a UFO kind of instance. And there also was thrown around possibilities of a Yeti.
Okay.
A Yeti. So.
But they destroyed their tent from the inside.
Yeah, they ripped it out like they were trying to escape something. Okay. So. The avalanche theory ended up being the most popular theory for what they think could have happened. However, there were a lot of different thoughts on that.
How buried were their tents, though?
Like, almost not at all. But there was snowfall, because it had been about a week between finding them. Uh-huh. So, the location did not have any obvious signs of an avalanche having taken place. It would have left debris. The bodies were found within a month of the event. They had a very low, very shallow layer of snow. Mm-hmm. The bodies didn't appear to be swept away. The analysis of the terrain and the slopes showed that even if there could have been a specific avalanche that found its way around, the path would have gone past the tent. They were all experienced hikers and skiers, so they didn't believe that they would be overtaken by an avalanche. Oh, and the footprint patterns leading away from the tent were inconsistent with someone, let alone a group of 9 people running in panic from either real or imagined danger. Mm-hmm. They were all leading away from the tent and towards the woods at a normal pace. So it ended up being ruled a... It was reinvestigated multiple times. Mm-hmm. They actually reinvestigated it in 2015, but it ended up being ruled as an avalanche, even though there were a lot of arguments against how it couldn't have been an avalanche.
I don't agree with the avalanche thing.
I like the KGB interference one. The way that they kind of supported their argument was that they weakened the snow base around their tent, essentially. So then the snow field above the tent started to slide down slowly under the weight of the new snow, which then pushed the tent fabric. They wake up and they start to evacuate, panicked, which is why they weren't all dressed, with only a few of them put on warm clothes. And then some of them didn't even have shoes. One had one shoe. Some had no socks on. They had to cut a hole in the tent fabric. And then they went down the slope to find a place that they thought would be safe at the forest border. The group splits up. 2 of the group only in their underwear and pajamas that were found at the tree near a fire pit. They believe that they died of hypothermia first. Then it looks like they divided their clothes up between each other. So, like, some people would be more protected than the others. Mm-hmm. So, 3 of them tried to go back to the tent to get their sleeping bags. They had better clothes, but were wearing incomplete footwear. Mm-hmm. And then their bodies were found at various places, ranging 300 to 600 meters from the campfire, looking like they fell of exhaustion while trying to climb in deep snow in extremely cold weather. Mm-hmm. And then the last 4, which had warm clothes and footwear, they believed to be trying to find or build a better camping place in the forest further. So those bodies were found 70 meters down from the spot where they had set up a little camp under several meters of thick snow, which they think those are the ones that had the extenuating injuries. They think that they fell in a snow hole that was formed above a stream. And those ones took the longest for them to find. It took them 4 months to find them.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so overall that's what they ruled it as. But there were a lot of really good theories. The catabatic winds, the infrasound, all of that. They also didn't try to eat each other. My last story.
Like our plane guys.
Like our plane guys. But also it sounds like none of them even made it long enough to do that. But a lot of the research was suggesting that they never should have split up at all. And that that was what ultimately was their downfall. It's just also interesting because they were all really experienced hikers.
Yeah.
They all had like years of hiking. None of them were new to hiking. And that is my story.
What's the name of your story?
The Altov Pass incident.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Look into it if you guys are very interested, because some of the conspiracy theories were good.
Yeah, the conspiracy theories are really good on that one. Mm-hmm. I've heard, like, aliens and shit like that, because, Like, they had marks on the insides of their bodies, nothing on the outside.
Yeah, some of them had, it was all internal
things. Nothing was, like...
It wasn't obvious, which is why they started to investigate the bodies, and that's why they reinvestigated it, too.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's the tea.
The tea.
What's yours?
Okay. That was very good. Good job.
Thanks. Oh, I got my information from Wikipedia.
Okay. I'm not going to tell you what it's about.
You never do.
I never do. I like to keep you on your toes.
I like all to right. not know things. That was the weirdest yawn I've ever heard in my life.
Alrighty. In the early hours of Sunday, August 31st, 1997.
Love it.
On a stretch of road in Paris, a driver in a W140 Mercedes-Benz lost control of the vehicle at the entrance of the Pont de l'Am. The Pont de l'Am. Dulama. That's what it sounds like.
Dulama.
Tunnel. The car struck the right-hand wall and then swerved to the left of the two-lane road before it collided head-on with a 13th pillar that supported the roof. The car was traveling at an estimated speed of 65 miles per hour, which was twice over the tunnel's 31 mile per hour speed limit, and it then spun and hit the stone wall of the tunnel backwards, finally coming to a stop. The impact caused substantial damage, mostly to the front of the car, and there was no guardrails between the pillars to prevent the damage. You know how you see the pillar, yeah. Mm-hmm. People started to come over to the wreck when smoke appeared, and four people were in the vehicle at the time of the crash. Henry Paul, the deputy head of security at the Hotel Ritz of Paris, was driving. Trevor Reese Jones, which was a bodyguard, and Dodi Fayed, a billionaire's son, an Egyptian film producer, Dodi. And the Princess of Wales, Diana. Or, in other words, Princess Diana.
Oh!
Paul and Fayed died at the scene, and Reese Jones survived with serious injuries. Princess Diana was taken to a hospital in Paris, but several hours later, at 4 a.m., she died, succumbing to her injuries, which included a severed pulmonary vein. A lot of people believe many different factors caused the crash, and the paparazzi, I'm sure you've heard conspiracy theories and stuff about it. The paparazzi were following them even after a decoy car was sent out before them. And they left out the back door. They even got mobbed with cameras flashing and people shouting because they didn't believe the decoy car. Yeah.
Okay.
It's believed that in the car right before the accident, a motorcyclist took a photo and the flash distracted the driver, causing the crash. Or that the erratic behavior of the paparazzi following the car helped cause the crash. However, in 1999, a French investigation found that Paul, who lost control of the vehicle at high speed, was intoxicated and under the effects of prescription drugs. They believe he was solely responsible for the crash, not the paparazzi, not anybody else. He was the deputy head of the security at the Hotel Ritz and had earlier provoked paparazzi waiting for Diana and Fayed outside the hotel. Antidepressants and traces of an antipsychotic were found in his blood, and they believe that may have worsened Paul's already inebriated state. Diana was 36 years old when she died. Her death caused an outstanding outpour of public grief in the United Kingdom and around the world. Her funeral was held 5 days after her death in London and had estimated 1 million people lining the funeral route from her home in Kensington Palace to Westminster Abbey, where her funeral was held, and it was watched by an estimated 2.5 billion people. So, there's a lot of people who believe that there was something more intentional that had led to the events of that night, and those conspiracies were so convincing and so widespread, and it doesn't help that the Daily Express and Egyptian businessman Mohammed Al-Fayed fueled the fire. Mohammed was Dodi's dad.
Mm-hmm.
The Met police were forced to launch Operation Pagan, which was an inquiry to establish whether there was any truth to the theories that were being spread. In the last years, it cost millions of pounds, and they never really found anything. So here's a list of some of the questions that they ended up trying to follow and look into. Whether the driver error on the part of Henry Paul caused or contributed to the cause of the collision. Mm-hmm. Whether Henry Paul's ability to drive was impaired through drinking or drugs. Whether a Fiat Uno or any other vehicle caused or contributed to the collision. Whether the actions of the paparazzi caused or contributed to the cause of the collision. Whether the road tunnel layout and construction were inherently dangerous, and if so, were this contributed to the collision. Whether any bright lights, flashing lights, contributed or caused the collision, and if so, where did they come from? Mm-hmm. Whose decision it was that the Princess of Wales and Dodi Al-Fayed should leave from the rear entrance to the Ritz and that Henry Paul should drive the vehicle. Henry Paul's movements between 7 and 10 p.m. on August 30th, 1997. Whether Diana's life would have been saved if she had reached a hospital sooner or if her medical treatment had been different. Whether Diana was pregnant. Whether Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed were about to announce their engagement. Whether, and if so, in what circumstances, the Princess of Wales feared for her life. The circumstances related to the purchase of the ring. The circumstances in which Diana's body was embalmed. And whether the British or any other security services had any involvement in the collision. So, one theory of Diana's death was that she was pregnant. And this, according to Mohammed Al-Fayed, the father of Dodi Fayed, was the reason for the killing. They said that Diana had become pregnant with his son's child and that the idea was tasteless to the British state because, obviously, she was married to this dude. Mm-hmm. Fayed said that the royal family could not accept that an Egyptian Muslim could eventually be the stepfather of the future king of England.
Oh.
And so they plotted to kill her off. But there was no sign of a pregnancy during the post-mortem examination. And further tests on Diana's blood found that there was no sign of pregnancy. So that one was moot. Another theory was that she knew she was going to be killed. Paul Burrell, Diana's one-time butler, was given later for safekeeping a letter. And in it she wrote, "I'm sitting here at my desk today in October, longing for someone to hug me and encourage me to keep strong and hold my head high. This particular phase in my life is the most dangerous. ... is planning an accident in my car, brake failure and serious head injury in order to make the path clear for Charlie to marry." The letter appeared eerily predictive, and indeed, it already had some meaning behind it when Diana wrote the letter. She had already experienced problems with her car, and her bodyguard had died in an accident that she believed to be a conspiracy theory, because there was a lot of rumors flying around that they were together.
Ooh.
There was a lot of talk of a love affair between the two, and he was killed in a car crash she believed was planned, so that they couldn't be together. Mm-hmm. There's numerous theories, a lot of them surrounding the royal family, looking to remove Diana from their ranks because of the way she conducted herself very differently from the royal norms. Mm-hmm. But eventually in 2008, the jury at a British inquest returned a verdict of unlawful killing through grossly negligent driving by Paul and the paparazzi for following the vehicle. It was also found that none of the occupants in the car were wearing a seatbelt either. So that's the story of Princess Diana's death, and then there's tons of conspiracy theories, but I'm sure you know about her. A lot of people do. Mm-hmm. She was so different from what the British family was used to, and like the way that they were known to conduct themselves. Like, she was one of the first, I'm pretty sure she was one of the first people to, like, she dressed differently, she dressed modern, she was, like, had her hair short, and she was just this beautiful woman that they were like, we can't really control her, she's not of royal blood anyway, she's just married in, and they didn't like that. They didn't like that she was also one of the first people to go to, like, an AIDS rally and, like, hold the hands, and that was before people knew that you don't get AIDS from just touching people.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people really, like, they didn't like her. So, there's a lot of conspiracies that, like, they were trying to take her out, basically.
And they had released that one interview, or, like, re-brought it up recently where she was like, I don't think they want me to be in the British family. And then they were like, why? And she's like, well, I don't think that I'm what they expect of me.
Yeah. But. Which is like, you see them and you're like, oh yeah, I kind of get that. Because all the hate that Meghan Markle gets
and against Meghan Markle Katie. Constantly doing like parallels in her outfits like Princess Diana, I really like that.
Yeah. So you can really see that, like, yeah, she gets hate all the time.
Yeah.
So, and she's so different from Katie. I think her name's Katie. The other one. The other one's wife.
Kate. I think it's just Kate.
I think so.
Kate Middleton, I think, or something.
Yeah. I think Kate Middleton's an actress, but I think her name is Kate something, too.
I don't fucking know.
So, yeah, that's the story of Princess Diana. I've never really knew the story. I know that there was, like, a lot of stuff surrounding her.
Yeah,
because how different she was. And
I thought she'd already been engaged to that guy, too.
There was talk of an engagement, too. I don't know if she ever got the ring, though, so I don't really know.
You gotta get that ring, girl. Mm-hmm. Secure the ring.
Yeah. So, that's the story of Princess Diana of Wales.
Wow. Good job.
Thanks. That's what I got.
That's what you got. Well, thanks for coming, you guys.
As usual. You were great.
At this point, you already know who the president is, so.
We don't, though.
We don't. The election polls are still polling.
We're currently sitting at Joe Biden 264.
Yes.
And Donald Trump 214. Remember when this was fun, guys? When we didn't know who the president was going to be?
Remember how fun it was to not know? Very exciting. There's a U-Haul outside of the White House right now, so. Well.
Is somebody moving in or somebody moving out?
You never know. I mean, either of those would be the same thing then. Because if they already live there, so they can't. They wouldn't be moving back in when they already live there. Well, thanks for coming. If you would like to see accompanying photos or info, you can get that on our Instagram and our Twitter at
Gumshoe Weekly.
And our Facebook at
Gumshoe Pod.
And if you want to email us to confess to killing Princess Diana, we didn't even talk about John Mulaney.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely killed her. Anyways, he was 8 years old. Anyways, but he killed her. So, anyways, it was John Mulaney all along and her fiancé. He killed the fiancé. Anyways, but, yeah, you can email us your confessions, John Mulaney, at
gumshoeweekly@gmail.com.
Gmail@gumshoeweekly.com. Thanks for coming by.